So, my name is Stacey Denham, and I am an asthma educator from New Orleans, and I work with Xavier University and the Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities Research. So we're going to talk a little bit today about community violence and asthma education and presenting a psychosocial model to asthma care and education. I have nothing to disclose. So we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff today. I will try and quickly fly through it. The disparity of pediatric asthma in New Orleans. We're going to discuss the HEAL Phase 2 project, asthma education and management in a federally qualified health center in New Orleans, psychosocial stressors of living in a community of violence and its effect on children with asthma, the assessment of patient exposure to violence through asthma education and the link between violent communities and asthma control, and finally, a psychosocial approach to administering the asthma education to pediatric patients and their families living in communities of violence. So we got a lot to discuss. So HEAL means Head of Environmental Asthma in Louisiana. It's part of the Phase 2 of the project, which is an extension of Phase 1, working through community clinics in the New Orleans area, providing pediatric asthma care. So asthma prevalence in post-Katrina greater New Orleans area, there's about a 12.8% rate of asthma prevalence in the area, with 6,000 of that being children. Now, it's important to note that around the Orleans area, we also have four other counties or parishes, as we call them, St. Bernard, St. Tammany, Plaquemines, and Jefferson. And all of those comprise the greater New Orleans area. So when we say Orleans Parish has a 12.8% rate, that's where all our hospital care is, our trauma centers are, and everyone else from the greater New Orleans area also comes to Orleans Parish for that care and that help. So HEAL Phase 1, it was a prospective observational study designed to simultaneously examine the impact of Hurricane Katrina on children with asthma living in the New Orleans area and provide an asthma case management intervention emphasizing environmental risk control. So that was HEAL Phase 1, and we provided asthma educators that were certified, which provided asthma education and telephone case management. And we also had community health workers that worked alongside with us that went into the homes of all of our patients and caregivers, and we also provided environmental education and remediation as well as asthma education and follow-up. And the merger from HEAL 1 to HEAL 2, we found that collaboration was key to the HEAL 2 success. We're funded through Merck Childhood Asthma Network, housed at Xavier, and work through the Daughters of Charity Community Clinics. So the spot in the middle is the sweet spot of success. So HEAL Phase 2 is a cohort study designed to track health asthma outcomes of approximately 174 asthma children ages 2 to 18, with a focus on not well-controlled and very poorly controlled asthmatics. We're in the translational phase, which means we are in the clinic and we are practicing asthma education. So we're measuring the effectiveness of the intervention of the asthma educator. We're providing clinical follow-up at 3, 6, 12 months, and we're working in a multidisciplinary clinic, basically meaning we have behavioral health in-house, we have dental services, optometry services, everything in the clinic at one spot. It's a one-stop shop. We also have community health workers, which are wonderful in going out on those home visits and doing environmental education. And so three main goals of the project are the management and control of asthma, some systems change in the clinic workflow, as in implementing the asthma educators into the clinic workflow, and integrating asthma guidelines into the electronic medical record system. So this is just a preview. On your right-hand side, you have our model for the psychosocial model for asthma education. Now, our integration into the clinic works a little bit like a medical assistant's integration into the clinic, or a nurse or a provider. So we just kind of fit into the system. So let's say, for instance, a patient comes into the clinic, they're called back by the medical assistant, the workflow goes like this. The medical assistant then administers an asthma control test and does a lung function test. Those results are then input into the electronic medical record, which then alerts the provider and the AEs that a patient is here in the clinic. And so once we get that information, we're able to go into the room and we're able to assess the patient asthma severity and their control, as well as their patient knowledge and perception of their knowledge of asthma. So with all those tests and all the information that we have, we walk into the room with this and are able to ask the patient and their caregiver, how's your asthma today? What's that looking like? What are your symptoms? When's the last time you took your medicine? Oh, you missed them? How come? Tell me a little bit about that. So through these open-ended questions and through these kind of narratives, we get a lot of psychosocial issues and feedback from the patient and the caregiver. So a little bit about our clinic. It is a Catholic nonprofit federally qualified health center. It's located in a central part of the area in the city called Mid-City. It accepts all patients, insured, uninsured, you can't pay anything, homeless, we accept you no matter who you are, what you look like. They follow the chronic care model, and like we said before, it's really a medical home. They pride themselves on being a one-stop shop. So we have a social worker, we have a psychiatrist, we have pharmacy, dental services, optometry, all in this one place. All right, so if you're familiar with the New Orleans area, or if you're not, this is a map of Orleans Parish. We're going to focus on the green and the orange areas. We have four clinics in the city. We have one in the east, in the 9th Ward, which is the purple area. The gray area is Metairie, and the one in the middle is the one we will be focusing on. So each clinic is located in a poor social environment or a neighborhood where there's a prevalence of violence and low SES status. So we know that within low socioeconomic families, there's often a prevalence of chronic disease such as asthma, lack of access to healthy food, lack of access to care, all of the above. So about 30% of our kids that we see come from the orange and green areas, or the 70118, 70119 zip codes. Their median income is less than $27,000 a year, and about 28% of the families living in this area are living below the poverty level. The majority of the population is African American, with an increasing Latino immigrant population post-Katrina. This area and what we're going to focus on is extremely familiar to violence. There are a number of daytime shootings. They're familiar to drugs and turf wars. And I don't know if anybody knows Lil Wayne. Lil Wayne's from this area. This is what he sings about, or he raps about in his songs, just about the violence and the drugs in this area. So the kids that we focus on, the kids that we see, are at a neighborhood disadvantage. Their social determinants of their health are directly affecting their outcomes and broadening the disparity gap. So what we like to do is identify the social determinants of their health. And we ask, what is the neighborhood disadvantage? What does it characterize? It's characterized by a prevalence of poverty, of unemployment or underemployment, a lack of social cohesion in the neighborhood, substandard housing, housing that's just falling apart or hasn't been repaired since the hurricane or a recent storm, characterized by high crime and high violence exposure rates, as well as other psychosocial stressors. So Hale is really leading the way at making each clinic an asthma epicenter for management and control and education, while at the same time trying to close the disparity gap and linking access to care for this chronic disease, since each clinic is located in each of these neighborhoods of disadvantage. So once again, here's a map of our area. This is a map of the violence, murder, and assault rates from 2007 to 2008. Like we said, 7.2 per 1,000 rates of murder in our zip codes. And you can see the ones with the most densely colored pink areas are the ones we focus on. So we got a clinic in the east. We have a clinic in the 9th Ward, we have a clinic in Metairie, and we have a clinic right there in the middle of everything. So that's the one we are focusing on. So then we know what's going on. We see these social determinants of health. We need to address these psychosocial stressors. We can't just expect that someone walking in who has just been a witness to some crime can talk about their asthma. You know, they're in the middle of having an asthma exacerbation. They're not just going to sit down and talk about their day. So we discuss the stressors, or we see these stressors. And living in a community of violence, you have emotional instability, you have loss of control of your daily life function, lack of access to resources. You might have negative coping skills, or psychological trauma as a result of witnessing the violence. Your mom, your dad, your grandma might project some sort of stress onto you, the child, and you might be witnessing environmental stress. So a result of all this results in poor self-management of asthma and inconsistent use of controller medications and poor compliance with your primary care provider. So psychologically, while that's going on, within a child, something biologically is happening. So stress is a trigger for asthma exacerbations. So when the neurotransmitters are signaled, they go through the HPA process, and a whole loop process and reuptake process is triggered, which then triggers cortisol, which triggers your pro-inflammatory cells, which are the cells that are released when you're having an asthma exacerbation, which kind of, it feels like whenever you have a rush of adrenaline and you get really breathless and you can't breathe and your heart's racing. So your body is stimulating that, while at the same time, your body with asthma is also constricting and having that actual attack happen. So there's biological evidence that stress from violence is a trigger for this. So we have to remember there's two things going on. We have the child that's internalizing the biological and the psychological process, and we also have the caregivers living in a community of violence. And the caregivers, when they experience this, tend to mimic PTSD symptoms. So they tend to, the most common are rumination and projection, right? So they tend to have negative coping skills or negative problem-solving skills. They have a decreased motivation in being an interactive parent. Their perception and recognition of symptoms and control of their child's asthma is not necessarily there. They tend to ignore that or not fazed by that. The medication adherence is just not on their list. They don't know. The child is their own caregiver, whether that child is 2 years old or 13 years old. And the overall management of the child's asthma is just not an important factor. And also projection. If the caregiver experiences a crime, they project the anger and stress of the incident onto the child. And they also have anger themselves, experience negativity, and have a fight or flight physical reaction, whether that's ignoring the child as they're walking to the clinic or being overbearing physically with that child when they're losing patients in the clinic, and also their internalization of the incident. So in a quote from Wright, from an article that she wrote, she says, "Oftentimes caregivers experience stress from their environment that may prevent them from being able to give as much attention to their child's asthma as they would like. Learning how to better handle stress and having support from family may ultimately help reduce child's asthma symptoms." So really, in the end, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to help them and help them find the self-efficacy they need to handle the daily stress of their life. So we're going to skip over that slide and go right into addressing the therapeutic process. So we knew that something was missing. We knew that there's a link between violence and asthma. We knew that the coping skills parents had were sometimes negatively affected. We knew that we had to address that stressor that they were experiencing before we talked about anything else, any kind of asthma education. We knew that sometimes people need help with problem solving. If you can't pay a light bill, you don't have money to pay a light bill, you're not going to get medication for your child. So how can we solve this problem? Great, we have a pharmacy in-house that has $2 asthma pumps. Wonderful, we can try and work with that. So we also focus on the importance of management. So we knew we needed to bring something tangible and concrete to a caregiver's chaotic lifestyle in order to help them successfully manage asthma. So we came up with a patient-tailored care. So each self-management plan is tailored to the caregiver and the patient's life in that moment. And like we're all saying, we meet the patient where they are. We start where that patient is. You can't start anywhere else. You got to meet them. So we start with their knowledge and perception of their asthma. What do they know? What do they perceive as symptoms? We meet the patient's physical immediate need. You need help paying for medication? Let's go talk to our pharmacist. What kind of programs do we have here? We set tangible asthma goals that are realistic that a caregiver and a patient can do. You have to take medicine 2 times a day. When do you brush your teeth? Oh, we brush them 2 times a day. Great. Do you have tape at home? Let's tape that medication around your toothbrush so that we remember to take that medication 2 times a day. So in that, we also focus on problem-solving skills and teaching tools, like we just said, identification of triggers, of symptoms, how do you know when you're having an asthma attack, and proper techniques in taking medicine. So this is a little bit of our preliminary results. We don't have everything yet, but these are questions that are asked to the caregiver and regarding about stress. One is, are you concerned about your child's behavior and emotions? Do you have any concerns about how you have been coping with things? And have you been feeling unusually stressed lately? Of course, people always feel stressed, right? So we found a relationship between have you been feeling stressed and a child's control of asthma. So caregivers who are stressed had children who more often had not well-controlled or very poorly controlled asthma. So there is a relationship, although the p-values are not 0.05 as we would like them, we are going to continue to study this further. So our model, once again, we assess the patient asthma severity and control and their perception and their knowledge of asthma. We identify what are your social determinants of health in your neighborhood and the stressors that inhibit your self-management and control. Then we address those psychosocial stressors, whether in the session or we refer out to our social workers or our psychiatrist in the clinic. We then incorporate the therapeutic intervention. And then we do our patient-tailored self-management and education plan, and then see behavior change and improved asthma outcomes. And along the way, monitor and eval the whole thing. So in conclusion, children with asthma living in disadvantaged neighborhoods experience high levels of stress. Exposure to this stress biologically and psychologically alters the way the child perceives and experiences asthma. In administering asthma education, the AE must address the presenting problem before focusing on education, and a tailored asthma education experience improves pediatric asthma patient outcomes. So, there's our team, community health workers and educators. We'd like to thank Xavier and Ref. So, any questions?
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you've looked at, is there any sort of, are they having a motivational effect, like changing people, you know, maybe people have never stopped to think, do I care about my child?
Right. So those questions are part of the risk assessment tool that we use for their asthma, and they're kind of in there and cemented in there, so we can't really alter those questions, and we have not concretely, like, asked, well, why are you feeling stressed, or what makes you feel this way? So we've just taken from narrative what people have said in answer to that question, and come up with these answers and whatnot. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm just wondering if that's had an effect on behavior change.
Right. I think definitely it is, and it's definitely something that we are more specifically looking into with that question, kind of dissecting it even further and saying what specifically about this is affecting control and whatnot. So, yeah, definitely. Yes? Everybody pretty knows about it. It's word of mouth. So it's located in mid-city. Every clinic is on a bus route. So it's one-stop shop. You get on the bus, there we are. So, yeah.
Yes. The education and the community health worker.
Mm-hmm.
Is the community health worker providing education?
The asthma education? Uh-huh. No. So we have asthma educators, myself. I'm an asthma educator, so we provide that. Our community health workers do the home visits, and they've gone through a training process, and they go in, and they more emphasize the environmental education component. So they go over triggers to asthma episodes or things like that. So, like, if you're smoking in the home, how can we help you to stop smoking? What can we do to reduce the smoking exposure? You got mold? Here, look at our resource book. We have some numbers that we can help you call to help get rid of that for free.
Okay. And when you do the education piece, do you do it just with a caregiver or do you
no.
do the entire time?
It varies. We do it sometimes just the patient, maybe a 13-year-old will come in to see a doctor by themselves. So sometimes we'll do it with that child, but then other times a family of six will be there, and we'll do it with the whole family. So it varies, whoever comes into the clinic that day. But at some point, a caregiver has to be present. So when we do a telephone follow-up, we'll say, hey, we just saw your kid last week in the clinic, and this is what we talked about. We'd like to talk about this further with you. So.
I was just curious if you have considered to do the education in the home environment.
Right.
So that everybody hears the same message.
Right.
And also maybe the community health worker will be present and get addressed.
Right. And in our first phase, that's exactly what we did, and it worked wonderfully, and we got to see all aspects of that. But in the second phase, we are working more on implementing us in the clinic. So in the first phase of it, we met at libraries, and then we also met at people's homes. And like you said, it was a wonderful outcome. Mm-hmm. But this part, we're working on integrating the educators into the clinic workflow. So does that make sense?
Yes,
all right.
Of course, yes.
Good deal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.